Welcome to Issues weekly broadcast on Spirit FM 88.3. Romans chapter 13 verse 11 to 12 says, "And that knowing the time, that now is the high time to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light." On this broadcast, Brother Eben and his team reveal supernatural visions, dreams and prophecies with the accounts of the Bible, real testimony soundbite of heaven and hell that can affect your life eternally. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth, on the right hand of God. Set your affections on things above, not on things on earth. Topical areas include the reality of life, heaven and hell, the afterlife, times, and many more. This program is live every Saturday from 8 to 10 p.m. Be blessed as you are encouraged to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling.
Prophecies fulfilled, signs of the times, they're appearing everywhere. I can almost see the Father saying, "Son, go get my children."
Very good evening to our listeners. This is Spirit 88.3 FM, the program Issues of Life. This is Eben. We thank God for another weekend, another Saturday, and it's always a privilege to come your way. And indeed, the gift of life is something we should always cherish and be grateful for. Well, let me start this edition by first paying a tribute to the CEO of this station, Spirit FM, and the other stations who passed on last week in the U.S. And let me quickly read something, an obituary that was set up on their page in the U.S. It says, obituary Daniel McPeters, and popularly, I mean, was often called Dan Peters here, but Daniel McPeters, February 25th, 1951 to August 28, 2021, and he was also known as Kwesi Brony. He passed away Saturday 28th August 2021, 7:26 p.m. at Bannerdale Webb Hospital in Sun City, West Arizona in the USA. And it states Dan drove himself to the hospital on August 17th just to get a quick COVID test. But when the nurses and the doctors saw or tested him, they noticed he was having a major heart attack. On Saturday, 5:45 p.m., Renee, Angie, and Melody were able to say goodbye and released him to go to heaven. He died quietly and peacefully. The revival service was held Thursday, 2nd September, and that was it. And at the funeral home, then a little about him. Daniel McPeters was born St. Paul, Minnesota, on 25th February 1951. He graduated from Minnehaha Academy in 1969, continued on to receive his bachelor's degree from North Central University in Minneapolis, 1973. He then received his Master's of Divinity degree from Melody Land University in Anaheim, California, in 1975. Dan Peters was married to Renee Peters on June 2nd, 1973, in Strathcona, Minnesota. They were married 48 years. Dan was an entrepreneur, businessman, media broadcaster, and minister, wrapped up in one. Dan and Renee pastored in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Santa Ana, California, and North St. Paul, Minnesota. In 1996, Dan traveled to Ghana, Africa, and found his true calling. To date, he has built 7 radio stations in Ghana, Uganda, and South Sudan, spreading the gospel. Dan is survived by his wife, Renee Genevieve Peters, his 2 daughters, Angela and Melody, his 5 biological grandchildren, and his brother Steve and Jim Peters, his extended family that includes the Peters and other names there. But we take great comfort in knowing that Dan Peters is in heaven and his parents, with his parents and other siblings. And that is it. And indeed, he's done a lot for the Christian community in Ghana and in Uganda and South Sudan. At least, because if not for the setup of this station, I believe some of us will not have the opportunity to be on radio, to share the word of God and all that. And we thank God for his life. And, I mean, he's gone safely and quietly at the age of 70. Indeed. Well, for us believers, we know that there's a better and a brighter future for us. So we just take solace, in that. All right, so let me continue by getting into the news for the week. A lot is happening in the world as usual, but so many believers are caught up in the calmness of the state of the world, quote-unquote calmness. It's like, but see, we should not think that all is well, because it seems things are a bit calm, though things are happening. But, you know, relatively, if you find yourself in Ghana, you can easily be caught in the, you know, you think, well, nothing big deal, a little issues in Ghana and all that. But a lot is happening in the spiritual realm and in else, other countries elsewhere and all that. As believers, we are exhorted and instructed to know the times we are in. We are exhorted to know the seasons. We are exhorted to redeem the time and all that. But sometimes, you know, the state of the world, the cares of the world, the pressures of the world and all that tends to overrun us and outrun us. But the reason why we keep reminding ourselves of the states of the world, what is happening, is to at least let us stay focused on what really matters most in this life. So yes, you are schooling, you are working, whatever you are doing, but let's still keep focused and not lose our guard when it matters most. All right, let me start with this verse, Matthew 24:37. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. And then 24:38 says, for as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until the day that Noah went into the ark. You know, if you've been listening to this program for the last few weeks, you realize various countries flooding here, flooding there. Even in Ghana, I mean, northern region, we've had it. As for Kumasi and Accra, it's almost like a standard formula whenever it rains. I mean, our flooding is purely self-induced and lack of discipline and all that. Ours is purely that. But elsewhere where they have effective drainage systems and yet the systems are failing because of the heavy rain and downpour that is coming beyond levels that you've known. I mean, so you have various news networks. Sometimes some use the word biblical, unprecedented, apocalyptic. They use all these, you know, words to describe the state of the rain in these places, the floods and all that. But this week, strangely, the Holy Spirit just drew my attention to the fact that, you know, I've been following for the last 2 months, and different countries in Europe, in the US, in Africa, in Asia. And so Then this verse from nowhere just came into my mind, and the Spirit was prompting me to the point that these are reminders to the story of Noah. You know, sometimes we just forget about the warnings in the Bible, what Jesus said and all that. So God, in his own way, allows some things to at least draw our minds to the Bible again. So in case we've forgotten that he said his coming will be like us in the days of Noah, at least if you are seeing flooding in various countries, it should be a little reminder to us believers to the fact that this is nowhere near Noah's flood, of course, but at least a little reminder to that purpose as believers to know and to remind ourselves that these are indeed, we are, and obvious, we are living the days of Noah. I mean, worse off even than the days of Noah, but clearly these are reminders to the fact that we are living the days of Noah. So when you hear of these floods and flash floods and all that, yes, disasters are happening, but as believers, we should just see it as a prompting and a reminder. So let me just continue. It says, hundreds of thousands affected by heavy floods in South Sudan, says the UN. Over 380,000 people in South Sudan with overflowing rivers, submerged homes, and displaced families and impoverished country, according to the UN Humanitarian Agency. And then Hurricane Ida, I mean, that hits the U.S. this week, has been terrible. And Ida triggers massive flooding across northeast. And after the hurricane hits itself, it hit at Category 4, and then it dissipated and then became, gave a lot of rain across the various states it moved through, and it caused major, major flash floods in New York that they've not seen before, levels they've not seen before. You watch some of the videos, people are in the train station, subway, underground, and the water is just flowing, just coming, rushing in, homes, a lot, cars. As for cars, just being tossed around. And, you know, sometimes when you see these things, it should just be a reminder to us that, you know, we cannot put our life and all our hearts in these earthly things. Because, is it, yes, using them is not a sin, but if that is all your life, I mean, your life depends on these things only, and that is all to you, this is your life, I mean, they can just be taken away within an hour, a minute, then you've lost it, it's destroyed. Well, insurance may replace and all that, but you see, just to buttress the point that these things are perishable, so we shouldn't tie our hearts to the material things we own or we use in this world. So far, I think over 60 people have died in various states and some places out of power for. And according to the engineers, it's going to be weeks and all. And as I'm just reading this, a new hurricane is moving in the Atlantic. And that one is Hurricane Larry. And this evening, so far, it's reached Category 3. And they are saying that it seems it's also going to have a potential of being another danger again to the U.S. And, you know, these are things which lets you understand that when God gives warnings to some places, indeed, they come to pass. Because I'm not surprised, because I've read earlier warnings about the fire and the water being used as part of reminders and part of judgment in some places in the world, and that seems to be exactly what is happening. And we have floods sweep cars into sea and damage homes in northeast Spain. In Ghana too, we had our own, the Tamale, the northern parts flooding, and all. See, things are just not normal, but sometimes people just underestimate it. But there was this headline which really summarized it well. This is climate change. Big increase in weather disasters over the past 5 decades. The number of weather-related disasters to hit the world has increased fivefold over the past 50 years, says the World Meteorological Organization. However, the number of deaths because of the greater number of storms, floods, and droughts has fallen sharply. Scientists say that climate change, more extreme weather, and better reporting are behind the rise in these extreme events. But improvements to warning systems have helped limit the number of deaths. As global temperatures have risen in recent decades, there has been a significant uptick in the number of disasters related to weather and water extremes. In the 50 years between 1970 and 2019, there were more than 11,000 such disasters. 11,000 such disasters, according to a new atlas from the WMO that charts the scale of these events. Over 2 million people died as a result of these hazards, with economic losses amounting to $3.64 trillion. The number of weather, climate, and water extremes are increasing and will become more frequent and severe in many parts of the world as a result of climate change, said WMO Secretary General Professor Petri Talas. They say that means more heat waves, drought, and forest fires such as those we have observed recently in Europe and North America. We have more water vapor in the atmosphere, which is exacerbating extreme rainfall and deadly flooding. The warming of the oceans has affected the frequency and area of existence of most intense tropical storms, he added. More than 90% of the deaths related to weather disasters have occurred in developing countries. But if you notice that this year's disasters, majority are happening in the developed countries. So I'm sure when the statistics for this year is factored into this data, the dynamics are going to change, because a lot of the disasters this year are more in the developed, the Northern American continent, Europe, the developed part of Asia, Japan, China, and all these places. Okay, it says the biggest killers have been droughts, responsible for 650,000 deaths, whilst at the other end of the scale, extreme temperatures took nearly 56,000 lives. But over the 50-year period, the overall death toll from disasters fell rapidly. Behind the stark statistics lies a message of hope, said Prof. Talas. Improved multi-hazard early warning systems have led to significant reduction in mortality. Quite simply, we are better than ever before at saving lives. While more people have been saved in the face of an increasing number of extremes, the economic toll has mounted. Reported issues in the decade between 2010 and 2019 were around $383 million per day, a sevenfold increase on the $49 million per day between 1970 and 1979. Three of the extreme events with the biggest financial impact all occurred in the same year, in the year 2017. And it saw hurricanes Harvey, Maria, and Irma hit the U.S. Taken together, the economic impact of the three accounted for 35% of the total losses from the top 10 disasters between 1970 and 2019. The Atlas points out that whilst improvements in warning systems are helping to save lives, there is much more work to be done. Only half of the 193 countries that are members of the WMO have multi-hazard early warning systems in place. So you see, clearly, these are from the scientific point of view, the world is just experiencing more of these weather related things, but we can say for sure that it's going to get worse, it's going to increase, and it's going to get worse. The next one is quite interesting. White House warns U.S. not adequately prepared to handle future pandemics without new strategy. You know, when it comes to these things, sometimes they say it lightly, like, oh, well, it's just in advance preparation and all that. But they are also coded messages, because when some of these people talk ahead of time, they just give a signal indirectly to those who understand. You know exactly what they are trying to say, you know. And like I give the example of, you see, when World Economic Forum organizes programs or they talk about something, invariably it's just more of a notice that watch out for these things. That, so they've said it in, well, I mean, like a notice of preparation, but it's a notice of warning indirectly for those who understand the state of the world and how these people do things. The White House warned Friday that the United States is not adequately prepared to handle future pandemics and other high consequence biological threats, and rolled out a strategy that would fundamentally transform the nation's ability to prevent, detect, and rapidly respond to pandemics and threats. In a report released Friday by the White House Office of Science and Technology and the National Security Council, officials warned that the U.S. currently is not adequately prepared to handle future pandemics, warning that serious biological threats are expected to occur at an increasing frequency. President Biden's top science advisor and White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, OSTP, Director Dr. Eric Lander warned Friday that another pandemic could occur soon. That's how they always say these things. So, they leave room, but okay, another pandemic could occur soon, possibly within the next decade. Okay. And would likely be substantially different than COVID-19. I remember when Dr. Fauci made statements 2 years or 3 years ago that President Trump would, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, I've forgotten the exact words to use, but President Trump would experience a pandemic in his presidency, his time as a president. You know, you ask yourself, why would he be too sure to make such a statement? Lo and behold, it happened so. You know, that's what I'm saying, that they speak in parables. But if you understand how these people do their things and operate and say things, you will know that clearly they are giving a message that things are going to happen. And indeed, from the biblical point of view and from the Christian perspective, we know things are going to happen and worse things are coming. But you see, it's just to let you understand how the powers that be are not surprised when some things happen. Because, you see, I mean, the WEF, for instance, World Economic Forum, I mean, if you follow their statements, you follow their activities. I joined their conference in July this year because I really wanted to. So when I saw the notice, okay, I signed up and I joined online. And you know what, the discussions and the topics and the things they were talking about, it's already started showing up in the news. I've been saying some here, the supply chain issue, the crisis, the food crisis and all. But you see, the way they present these things, if you understand how they do their things and the way they message their information, clearly you know that this is the next big thing that is coming. And indeed, it's unfolding gradually. So I'm not surprised when I see some headlines, because it's like hidden in plain view. They've said it, and they know those who understand will take it, but they know most people also not bother about some of these things. So when they see it cry or when they hear it, it means nothing to them. So that's the world we live in. There are people who really shape things, and there are people who shake things. I mean, they know the things they are doing exactly as they plan it. He goes on to say that we must prepare to deal with any kind of viral threats, he added. And then biological threats are increasing, whether naturally occurring, accidental, or deliberate. And the likelihood of a catastrophic biological event is similarly increasing, the report states. Officials warn that new infection diseases have been emerging at a quickening pace due to increased zoonotic transmission from animals arriving, driven by population growth, climate change, habitat loss, and human behavior, adding that the diseases are spreading faster with increased global travel. Officials also warn that the number of laboratories around the world handling, quote, dangerous pathogens, unquote, is growing. And let me comment on this, dangerous pathogens. You know, when you read about some of the research works being done now, and some that were done or were being done that brought about some of these things we are experiencing in the world now, and yet they would deny anyway. But see, they call something gain of function research. And you can read about it, gain of function research. You can search and read about it. It will amaze you what is happening in the world. The work, the lab work people are doing, experimenting viruses, changing things, altering them. You see, so, you see, why go venture in the area of these things, and then when it backfires, and then it leaks, and then it spreads, then you come and declare a pandemic to disturb everybody. And you see, behind the scenes, they are doing things. Because even this COVID, the Wuhan lab, they've been doing wild research works, being funded by the US and all that, NIH in the US. And you see, so when you listen to some of the Senate reports, I mean, some of the Senate questioning of Dr. Fauci and some of the scientists and all, you just ask yourself, so, you see, they are just fooling the world. That's exactly what they are doing. You see, so these people, they say things, and before they say things, they know what they are saying and why they are saying it. But as I keep saying, it's a coded message for those who understand to understand. Anyway, let me just move on quickly and goes on to say that this one is ISIS inspired terrorist stabbed 6 at New Zealand supermarket. And the man from Sri Lanka, believed to have been inspired by Islamic State, stabbed 6 people at a grocery store in New Zealand before being killed by law enforcement on Friday, according to a statement from the Commissioner of Police, Andrew Costa. The unnamed man entered the Countdown supermarkets at 2:30 p.m. local time, took a knife from a shelf, and began attacking people. The covert police specialist tactics group, which had tracked the man over concerns about extreme views, responded to the attack and stopped him around 60 seconds after he began the rampage. Due to court orders, the attacker's name has not yet been publicly disclosed. But I think earlier, hours ago, the court has also agreed that they can publish the name. And of course, I mean, you don't need to guess that much what he belongs to or what he, you know, all these things. It's the same ideology that they keep doing and acting on. Okay, and then last week I spoke about Harvard's, the head of chaplaincy in Harvard being an atheist. This week in the news again says, this headline says, Harvard's new atheist chaplain. We can be good without God. It's 2021, and I like the way this headline, okay, this article goes on, starts. It says, it's 2021, and anything is possible. A man can be a woman can be a man. A man can get pregnant, and there are so many genders you can identify as pretty much anything you would like to do, or you like to be. The transracial trend is just around the corner. In fact, definitions are now so fluid that Harvard's new chief chaplain, Greg Epstein, is an atheist and the author of a book titled Good Without God. It's worth noting that Harvard was founded in 1636 by John Harvard, a Puritan clergyman. Like other elite institutions, it was rooted solidly in the Christian faith. Now it is rooted in nothing at all. Greg Epstein, in fact, was elected unanimously to his new position as chief chaplain, which heads up to the organization of chaplains for the entire university. Epstein, understandably, was thrilled. Quote, "Thank you to the humanist institutions who inspired me down this now 20-plus year path," unquote, he said on Twitter. "I wouldn't be here, but for you. You mean so much to so many of us. Thank you, humanist allies, in the U.S. politics, my true religion." So his religion is U.S. politics. That's his true religion. "Thank you, interfaith groups who bravely set a precedent of warm partnership of humanists like me." And then it goes on to say, you read that right. Harvard's new chief chaplain says that U.S. politics is his true religion. That's all the Yankees. And then everyone has to worship something. Epstein's choices are common, but render him particularly unqualified for the role that he is taking on. Epstein's task will include leading over 40 chaplains from a wide range of religious backgrounds, including Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, and Christian. Epstein, believing in none of these traditions and rejecting the existence of God entirely, also says that he is a rabbi through the Society for Humanistic Judaism. I mean, whatever that is, that's what the article wrote. Unfortunately, Greg Epstein does represent a growing portion of the American public, those who do not believe in God and reject Judeo-Christian values, but hold on to a vague consumer-style spirituality that allows them to sighten to some semblance of transcendence whilst living like pagans. Sociologist Christian Smith called it moralistic therapeutic deism. Mm-hmm. And then it's rapidly becoming a defining worldview of the upcoming generation. It is interesting to note that as Americans increasingly identify as nuns, N-O-N-E-S, nun, like nuns, that is, do not fall into any traditional religious category, they do not identify as less religious. Instead, like Epstein, they attempt to cobble together some incoherent collection of views that allows them to delude themselves into believing that their truth is the truth in all of the ways that count. In the world of American nuns, God does not make demands of them. They make demands of God, whom they have attempted to reconstruct to their own image. An atheist chaplain is a farce, but then again, so is much of modern American life. Pregnant men, muscular bearded women, butchered babies as reproductive health care. Delusion is mainstream, and so is a godless chaplain bleating to the goats is perhaps uniquely fitting for our historical moment. We lie to ourselves about everything, and so it makes sense that we would want chaplains who lie to us too. And this level of deception and recreation of religion in various ways, as the article is saying, has entered the church. So you have churches now having their own doctrines that suits them to the point where some, well, can clearly say that some portions of the Bible should be edited because it's archaic and it's not fit for purpose in our modern 21st century. This is the world we are in, where Christianity is virtually a joke in some instances, because you ask yourself, so what Bible do these people also read? And it's amazing. They will quote portions of the Bible to justify their sins and justify their lifestyles and make it look like, well, you who says that the Bible is saying that these things are wrong, you don't even know what you are talking about. This week, Texas has been in the news for, depending on which side of the divide you are, for the good reasons, and the other side will say for the bad reasons. Texas, they've passed one of the harshest anti-abortion laws in the country, in the U.S., where you can't do abortion after 6 weeks, and as soon as the heartbeat of the child is identified, it's illegal to do abortion. And the president of US and the Congress and Pelosi and all those people are furious and they are angry. And you know, when I see some of the news, so the killing of babies, you are angry that babies are going to be protected. And it's amazing. It's serious. But this headline is a bit worrying. It tells you the mindset of the people. It says, Texas clinic reportedly performed 67 abortions in hours before the heartbeat law took effect. So last-minute abortions, people were just rushing. Just 17 hours ahead of the passing of Texas heartbeat bill prohibiting abortions after 6 weeks, one of the state's largest clinics reportedly conducted 67 abortions. According to a report from the 19th, the Whole Woman's Health Clinic in Fort Worth was filled with patients on Tuesday night, just hours before the pro-life law was set to go into effect at midnight on Wednesday. Marva Sadler, the director for clinical services, said she realized that the clinic needed to perform 8 abortions an hour with only one doctor on duty, an octogenarian who had been working since 7 a.m. We are not the bad guys here, she told her team. We are doing everything right and we are going to help everybody that we can. If there's someone that we can't help, it's not our fault. One young woman who was a drug user about to start serving a 5-year stint in prison reportedly begged Sadler to conduct an abortion. The woman was already 12 weeks pregnant and had 3 children at home, Faith Wire reports. According to the existing Texas law, however, the woman could not receive an abortion because patients had to wait 24 hours after the appointment to have a procedure done. Just before midnight, Sadler says she commended the doctor, telling him that physicians half his age would not be able to do what he did. She also reportedly told him that it would have been a victory even if it had only performed one abortion. On Wednesday morning, Sadler expressed grief as she already had to turn away 4 women, some of whom were just 5 weeks and 6 days pregnant. How unfair, she thought, that those women yesterday were helped and the women today don't have any help. And you see, so it tells you people, the mindset of people regarding this, they don't see it as anything bad. But it's worrying when the church or the supposed church also sees, or churches see it also in a very absurd way. So this next headline says, 25 Texas churches fight heartbeat ban and label abortion a moral and social good. Churches, these are supposed churches. Because it's not all churches that are churches, you know. We have synagogues of Satan, so some churches are also church of Satan, pretending to be Christian churches. A coalition of Texas churches is opposing the state's heartbeat law and promoting the continued legalization of abortion in what pro-life activist Albert Mohler calls tragic intersection of liberal religion and abortion politics. The 25 Texas churches were designated as reproductive freedom congregations. Reproductive freedom congregations, at a press conference in late August by Just Texas, a liberal organization that says that the goal of the churches is to eradicate stigma around reproductive freedom in Texas, one congregation at a time. Erica Forbes, the faith and outreach manager for Just Texas, said at the press conference that the designation was the first of its kind in the entire country. Significantly, the designation came 1 week before the state law took effect that prohibits abortion if an unborn baby's heartbeat is detected. Forbes said the goal of the congregations is lasting cultural change. or lasting culture change. This launching is the great beginning, she said. This designation will recognize Texas congregations working to hold conversations on reproductive health, build trust and respect for women, and remove the stigma on reproductive health decisions, including abortion. You know, so you ask yourself, what is their definition of murder? They don't see, they just see, they hide it and call that, they call it, well, reproductive health for women. So there's nothing about murder or killing a baby here. They don't see it as killing of life. And it's very unfortunate, because now you have churches who see nothing wrong with these things. And then goes on to say that reproductive freedom congregations must affirm three principles according to Just Texas. First is, we trust and respect women. We promise that people who attend our congregation will be free from stigma, shame, or judgment for their reproductive decisions, including abortion. Then three, we believe access to comprehensive and affordable reproductive health services is a moral and social good. Moral and social good. How can abortion be a moral and social good? But this is a definition for at least 25 churches in Texas. Thus far, most churches in the coalition are Unitarian Universalist, although some are Presbyterian, and one University Baptist Church in Austin is, and that one is Baptist. And then Mueller, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, said, labeling abortion as a moral and social good rejects Christianity's teachings. Yes, that's true. I mean, it's obvious. This is clearly obvious. Then that's an outstanding statement that turns the entire Christian theological heritage of 2,000 years on its head, he said on his podcast, The Briefing. Mueller called it a tragic intersection of liberal religion and abortion politics. The church that Jesus died for has strayed away far from the cross and has gone into the world, fully entertaining herself in the world. 20 states sue the Biden administration over LGBT directives for schools and workplaces. You know, they brought a new directive that schools and workplaces should make provision for LGBT and all that. And these 20 states are suing the administration for implementing expanded LGBT non-discrimination provisions that the plaintiffs believe run afoul of federal law as well as the U.S. Supreme Court precedent. A lawsuit was filed by Tennessee Attorney General Herbert Stuttery, okay, a Republican, in U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Tennessee, Knoxville Division on Monday. And they listed a number of states: Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and then Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, and West Virginia. They also signed onto the lawsuit as plaintiffs. And you see, this whole thing is to force the law that the directive from the government is to force companies and schools and all that to make provision for the LGBT. They can choose whichever washroom they want to go to at the premises and all. And it's unfortunate. It's just unfortunate. It's serious. And then Christian scholars, this headline says, Christian scholars slam reports arguing that LGBT progress doesn't threaten Christians. So this report was conducted, and they concluded that though the LGBT things are, you know, report and all that, Christians are not affected by it. But I don't think that's the truth. So Christian scholars have pushed back on a study in an American Psychological Association journal that concludes that laws designed to protect LGBT community from discrimination do not negatively impact Christians. The APA's Journal of Personality and Social Psychology published a study in January titled, Is LGBT Progress Seen as an Attack on Christians? Examining Christian and then Sexual Orientation Zero-Sum Beliefs. And then the report was based on studies conducted with five separate sets of participants. Some of the studies included Christians, LGBT individuals, non-Christians. Participation in others was limited to Christians. The research was conducted by Clara Wilkson and then Chad Miller and then others. Then it goes on to say that in an interview with Fox News, George Vancey, a professor at Baylor University, whose work was cited in the report, accused the authors of misleading their readers. The scholars cited Yancey's analysis of 40 years of attitudes towards conservative Christians based on the American National Election Studies, which they claim provides no evidence of increasing negativity toward Christians over time, and that attitudes average from near neutral to positive for fundamentalist Christians. They accurately cited that I did not find anti-Christian sentiments increasing, but did not cite that I also found that those with anti-Christian sentiments have grown more powerful in society over the past few decades. He said in the interview, needless to say, even if those with anti-Christian attitudes do not increase in numbers, if they increase in power, they have more of an ability to act on their religious bigotry. And that's exactly what is happening, where Christian bakers, Christian dressmakers and all these things are targeted by the LGBT community. If you don't do it for us, then they take you to court, they sue you for discrimination, for hate crime and all these things. So that's the world. And then 3,000 health workers sue Biden administration, another group, over mandate forcing them to perform sex change surgeries. So the two associations representing 3,000 medical professionals and an individual doctor based in Tennessee have filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration's transgender mandate, arguing that it violates federal conscience protection laws. The American College of Pediatricians and Catholic Medical Association, along with Dr. Jenny Dalso, filed a suit last week in the U.S. District Court for Eastern District of Tennessee at Chattanooga. At issue in the court case is the HHS current interpretation of Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, which bars sex discrimination, to include requiring doctors to perform elective gender transition procedures, including cosmetic surgeries such as double mastectomies and a whole list of other medical procedures. And this is what this thing includes, where, so you are a Christian doctor and they now want to say that you are forced to conduct a surgery on maybe a man or a boy, a teenager, a boy who wants to become a girl. So you have to perform the surgery. And seriously, your conscience, I mean, you don't believe in this thing in the first place of changing your sex from man to female to male or male to female. And now this law or this mandate from the government tries to say that ignore your Christian beliefs, ignore your conscience, and just do your work as a medical professional. And that's what they are fighting against. I mean, seriously, it will be very difficult for any of these 3,000 professionals to really work effectively, because it's like something that you detest, something that you are not comfortable with, you don't believe in it, you don't support it, and then now go to the theater and then change the sex of someone from a boy to a girl or a girl to a man. It's just crazy. But this is the world we are in. You see, the reason why the U.S. comes in, it's a critical part, is that they wield a lot of influence in a lot of countries. What happens in the U.S. indirectly influences the decisions in some other countries. You see, so sometimes you just look at it as, oh, well, it's only their case, it's only within their jurisdiction. But when these laws are effected, for instance, when during President Obama's time, the Supreme Court ruled legalized the gay marriage in the U.S., it's influenced some other countries to also follow suit. You see, so that influence from a big brother is real. I mean, it's so real that what happens there indirectly or directly, I mean, it makes effects or takes effect in some countries. And this is where sometimes then, if care is not taken, they may start pushing some of these things in their foreign policies. So, and naturally, I mean, the U.S. Embassy in Accra, they flew the gay flag. This year, they had the gay flag together with the U.S. flag at a point in time. You see, so, and the ambassador did a program, invited the LGBT community. They were happy there in the U.S. Embassy in Accra. You see, so, influence is very strong, and you can't, I mean, rule it out. So we really have to see the seriousness of some of these things in these countries. And I'm almost done with the news. This one, a cabinet member in the U.S. government, Pete Buttigieg, a husband, is the first gay cabinet, secretary, or like, well, U.S., they call it secretaries instead of ministers. There's a secretary, the first in the U.S. history. He is the transport secretary or transportation secretary. Pete Buttigieg and then husband introduced their two new babies in family photo. So two men, they have their babies, their adopted babies. That is one of the things that sometimes I don't know the words to use for it, because you say you want to be two men doing your thing, and you want to have babies. Who should give birth for you to go and adopt? If you want babies, then you should know that it's not possible for you to have babies, because what your actions are, what you engage in, there's no way you can procreate out of that. But yes, they want to force themselves to be like normal families. But how do you expect, that to happen? Which magic can perform that? So he says the transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, who made history as the first openly gay cabinet member to be confirmed by the Senate, and husband, Justin Buttigieg, are officially fathers, and then twice over. So that means they have two. After announcing last month that the two were expanding their family, the former 2020 Democratic presidential candidate and South Bend, Indiana mayor officially introduced the couple's new babies, sharing a black and white photo on social media of him and his husband. Him and his husband, each cradling a new baby, a newborn, in a hospital bed, as if they give birth to the babies. Justin and I are, quote, thankful for all the kind wishes since first sharing the news that we are becoming parents, unquote, Pete said on Twitter. And then goes on to say, we are delighted to welcome Penelope Rose and Joseph August Buttigieg to our family. And then Pete, 39, said on Twitter post last month that he and his husband were wanted to grow their family for some time, and they would share more soon on becoming parents. So the couple, which married in 2018, in an interview with Washington Post in July, Pete detailed their experience getting an adoption waiting list and for babies that have been abandoned or surrounded on short notice. He told the newspaper they had been trying to adopt for a year and had several close calls. So adoption, someone should give birth for you. And then you two males, you want to become parents. This world is sick. Seriously, Sodom and Gomorrah didn't get this far. No. They didn't get this far. This generation is serious. And then in Canada, pro-life MP warns about Canadian bills that are being filed in the Canadian parliamentary system that would or could oppress Christians across the country. And it's so serious that eventually the Christians are the targets. So Derek Sloan is a Canadian member of parliament representing the district in the province of Ontario in the House of Commons. He is greatly admired across the country for being a strong pro-family conservative. Mr. Sloan talks about two horrendous bills that were introduced in the House of Commons which have shocked Canadians across the country. Then the first one is Bill C-6, would effectively ban so-called anti-LGBT conversion therapy in all forms, including discussions by pastors and ministers and even admonitions by parents to their children. It is possibly the broadest such ban in the world that would cover an entire nation. Violations of the law would carry outrageous punishments, including fines and prison terms of up to 5 years. The legislation would appear to contradict Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that is our national constitution. Then the second bill, C-36, an expansive and tyrannical hate crimes bill that would make almost any ambiguous online criticism of the LGBT movement or other anti-family cause a federal crime carrying severe punishment. It even allows punishment of people who have a potential to post hate speech online. In addition, the law could be applied retroactively. So when this law is approved or passed, they can go back to your post in 2018, and then go and use it against you. But they put it on hold because they are, the current Prime Minister has, Justin Trudeau has called for elections. So I think September 20th, they have elections. But according to this MP, he says, however, both bills will surely be brought back in the next session since they represent a major political goal for the LGBT movement in Canada. And that's very worrying. Okay, so now let's come to Ghana. Film Classification Committee takes action on pornographic content on Prophet One TV. It's serious. The Film Classification Committee has taken an action on the pornographic content shown on Prophet One TV. The committee said in a statement copied to ZionFelix.net that the content was inappropriate for free-to-air television. Following this, the management of Prophet One TV has been given up to September 10, 2021 to provide the National Film Authority with the classification documents for all its in-house content, including the pornographic content shown. The FCC reiterated that all audiovisual content must be classified before exhibition. The Film Classification Committee, FCC, of the National Film Authority has cited pornographic content being shown on Prophet One TV. In this content, Ibn Adakwa Yadom, also known as Prophet Opambo, played a TV host recounting a sexual incident between a fetish priest male and a woman purported to be his client. This content depicts patently lewd sensual scenes perceived by the FCC as inappropriate for free-to-air television. Parts of the statement signed by the chairman of the Film Classification Committee, Socrates Safo, read. The statement added, the FCC has publicly announced that all audiovisual content must be classified before exhibition. In furtherance to this, all broadcasting channels have been directed to classify in-house content according to the film classification criteria given. The FCC is requesting the management of Prophet One TV to provide the National Film Authority with classification documents for all its in-house content, including the pornographic content shown by close of day on 10th September 2021. quote, kindly note that anyone who fails to comply with the film classification rules shall be subject to the offences and penalties in Section 27 and forfeiture of equipment in Section 28 of the Development and Classification of Film Act 935, unquote. You know, this fits exactly into what we talk about on this digital parenting as to the dangers on our screens. Imagine your children are watching this channel, supposed Christian channel, and then now pornography is being shown. I mean, how is it? The whole thing is just getting messy by the day. The system is becoming corrupted. Is it so? This is so dangerous now to just allow your children to just be watching things on TV without any monitoring or controls, because see, this is supposed to be a safe zone, at least supposed to be, but now here we are. But when I read the news this afternoon, I couldn't believe what I was reading. That I mean, why would it happen on a supposed Christian channel showing pornography? You see, so assuming now this channel was playing, or at that time, like, the channel was on in the Christian home, and then now this thing comes up, then what do you do? All the parents may not even be there, so they wouldn't even know their children have watched this. Then the harm has been caused. The seed has been sown in them. You see, so this issue of technology and digital technology and all these things is a very serious issue that parents have to pay attention to and act on these things, because you see, the devil is busy destroying lives from the children to the adults across board. They are using any means and every means possible to destroy lives. So if we don't guard our families regarding the things that the children are exposed to, then it can become a problem, because innocently they may just be watching a channel thinking there's nothing wrong, yes, but eventually they can get exposed to some of these things. So when it comes to TV, parents have to take the hard decision and control what is watched at home. And if possible, be really sure of the channels that you let your children watch at home. I'll be back after this short break, and we'll continue from there.
Search me, oh God, and know my heart today. Try me, oh Savior.
Thank you. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me, and know my thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
I surrender.
Right now, offer my body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to you, my Lord. For I know that this is my spiritual act of worship. And I don't want to be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but let me be transformed by the renewing of my mind. Then I'll be able to test and approve what your will for my life is.
Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM Kumasi. Greetings to our listeners online, various countries and various regions outside the country and outside this city. I'm Eben, and for the last few weeks, talking about digital parenting and some things parents should be doing and to protect our families, our children, and all that. Like the news I just read is a classic example of some of the dangers that we have on our screens and our TV stations and all that. But let me just read this one. In China this week, they brought this issue up. China limits children's online gaming to 3 hours a week to combat addiction. China on Monday announced a drastic cut to children's online gaming time to just 3 hours a week during term time, that's during the school time. The latest move in a broad crackdown on tech giants in the world's biggest gaming market. Gamers under 18 will only be allowed to play online between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, state news agency Xinhua said, in what it described as a bid to curb addiction in the gaming-crazy nation. Gamers are required to use their ID cards when registering to play online to ensure minors don't lie about their age. On school holidays, children will be allowed to play a little longer, with their allocated time set at 60 minutes per day. Gaming addiction has affected studies and normal life, and many parents have become miserable, the National Press and Publication Administration said in a statement. Companies are prohibited from offering gaming services outside the stipulated hours, although the statement did not make it clear how rule breakers will be punished. An earlier restriction in place since late 2019 banned late-night games and restricted players to just 90 minutes of playtime on weekdays and 3 hours on weekends and holidays. China's communist rulers have been reigning in big tech and other powerful sectors that draw hundreds of millions of consumers. Gaming seems to be the largest target for regulators, hit by a raft of rules introduced in recent months to weed out the excesses of the culture among Chinese youth, from worsening eyesight to online addiction. The industry, which made revenue of 130 billion yuan, that's $20 billion, in the first half of this year, according to China Audio, Video and Digital Publishing Association, has been slammed in menacing state media reports in recent days, with one article labeling games as spiritual opium. In July, Chinese tech giant Tencent rolled out a facial recognition midnight patrol function to root out children masquerading as adults to get around the government curfew on underage gamers. And this is a very serious thing. Game addiction. Addiction. It's real. I mean, you see, they are where they are now. It's not just an overnight approach. They didn't just get to the addiction overnight. It started with 1 hour. Oh, 30 minutes, 15 minutes. Oh, let me go extra 10 minutes. Let me go extra 15 minutes, an extra hour. Then, by the time you realize, countless hours just down the drain. You know, when it comes to addiction, no one gets addicted like with a plan that I'm going to get addicted. No. But by the time you realize you become, or you are becoming addicted, or you become addicted. You know, this game thing, I saw one news report, I think it should be last year. And it was so amazing how you have a teenager playing games for, you know, hours on hours on hours. And so the mother, in a bit to, you know, mothers are worried when their children are not eating or all that. So in a bit to help the situation, the boy was still playing the game, and the mother was spoon feeding this teenager. When I saw that, I said, what? But this is a reality. So this teenager can't even stop the game because it's like competition, most likely. I mean, that's where the addiction even becomes stronger. And so you have this boy in a competitive mode, online gaming, and can't even stop to eat. So a concerned mother can just step in to just spoon feed him. And this is a classic case of how addiction can take things too far. A few years ago, I read another report where this young man played games continuously for another 48 hours or 72 hours without blinking the eye, and eventually he collapsed and died. You know, these are the extremes, of course. But, you see, they didn't get there overnight. They started 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then they got there. You see, so if you don't start controlling your child now, there is the possibility that eventually the increase will come. This week, I decided to do a social experiment in my home. So, you know, the children will be opening next week, God willing. And so they are free. They came from Accra. Like, they are home. So I just, normally I restrict them in terms of using their tablets. And they have some games on. But these are all games which I'm aware of and all that. So, but I decided just to not to okay on some one of the days or two of the days, no limits. I didn't say anything. They just have it. And you see, you realize that if you don't check, they will go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And you can see, you see, that is how this whole thing gets evolved. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. You see, so the continual usage increases the addiction or the interest level. No, let me, so if it's a game you've lost, no, I have to win the next time. So let me start again. Then you, no, let me start again. You lose, let me start again. You see, so you keep going and going and going and going and going. And then by the time you realize you've gone for many hours. But at the end of the day, is this really something beneficial? Let me read. I saw a very interesting article in the Irish Times, and I believe it's good for our discussion. And then, yeah, let me read that one. It says, how the headline is, how technology and social media is undermining family relationships. And this was published in 2018. New research shows children are spending considerable amounts of time on technological devices. A study published by Centre Parks Ireland in April revealed that 3 out of 4 children in Ireland, aged 16 or under, have at least one technological device. The study revealed that children spend an average of 3 hours daily on these devices, and that 83% of parents surveyed found the use of technology and social media in the home to be a challenge. Don Laugar, based play therapist Aaron Bryan, is concerned about the impact on the emotional and social skills of small children in families where high usage of mobile devices and exposure to tech games is the norm. Quote, devices are used to pacify small children of 3 or 4 years of age, unquote, he observes, where once a toddler would have learned to manage difficult emotions through interacting with a parent who would help them regulate their feelings. Now, they are being handed a technological device. The interaction with the parent is not happening, he warns. Yet, crucially, young children need the parent to teach them to manage their emotions. But if parents themselves are often on devices, and then into brackets, research published by Deloitte last year showed Irish people check their devices an average of 57 times a day, while 16% checked 100 times a day. This guidance is not always available. My fear is that the small sublets, in this case the children, of normal human interaction with a child don't happen, says Brian. Each time a parent distracts an upset child with a device instead of making eye contact, talking to, soothing, and picking up the child, he believes a crucial teaching opportunity can be lost. This can happen on a constant basis, as most parents have devices with them everywhere, home, car, park, and the distraction is happening very frequently with a lot of families, observes Brian. Then adding that he is increasingly dealing with children who are more snappy and irritable and less able to manage their emotions. He is also seeing more and more children of 9 or even 10 years of age throwing tantrums. They are quicker to lose their cool and get angry. They will disengage or flash to anger when their wants are not met. They are less able to manage their emotional states than they would be through learning how to interact and negotiate from parents or other caregivers. Brian believes this phenomenon is linked to overexposure to tech and particularly to online games and apps, which are designed to give the brain frequent logical hits or bursts of satisfaction. And with children, with rich children as young as four are now engaging. According to April research, 57% of parents surveyed were unhappy with the amount of time their children currently spend using technology, with one in four revealing that an addiction to social media, online games, and YouTube was their biggest challenge or concern for their children. But it's not always easy to come between children and technology either. In 40% of cases, researchers found attempts by parents to stop children using technology resulted in an argument. In fact, only 29% of parents surveyed frequently stopped their children from using technology. Children enjoy the gratification hits offered by virtual games, which don't happen like this in the real world. So when children are interacting with other people, irritability can surface, according to Brian. The real world is less manageable and the level of control is less compared to what they get in the games. So you see these flashes of anger or the need to control and have everything or set out the way they want it to be. While Brian is careful to emphasize that we don't know for sure what the long-term impact might be on the children whose devices regularly from an early age, there does appear to be cause for concern. Children's ability to manage expectations and disappointments in relationships seems to have disimproved because these games are devised in such a way that interaction is very satisfying. However, human interaction takes more work, concentration, and negotiation, which you don't have to do in a game. Neuroscience has shown, he says, that we need to interact with each other to develop into healthy human beings. My concern would be that overuse of these devices in the home interferes with this crucial early learning. Unlimited use of technology also seems to disrupt the flow of normal family life by interrupting normal parent-child interactions, according to Draginia. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then allowing access to technology without setting expectations around its use can result in stresses to the child-parent relationship, she warns, adding that where usage is high, there can also be less awareness of what is going on in the child's lives, in the children's lives, sorry. The emotional connection within the family is not as strong as it could be. The quality of the relationship and interaction is impacted on by the presence of the devices. In the family car, for example, you might have three children in the back seat with their own devices, so there's little to none of the traditional interaction or turn taking, she says, adding that ruptures in the relationship between child and parent can occur. If your child is allowed on the phone regularly, this can result in a lack of opportunity to talk and connect as members of the family. Family relationships are being diluted by the presence of this third party, in this case referring to technology, says Ni, who urges parents to provide an environment that allows their children to develop physically, intellectually, socially, and emotionally, and I will add spiritually, through play and by reading books, making eye contact, and learning how to understand nonverbal cues. Quote, empathy, for example, needs to be modeled and taught, unquote, she explains. It allows children to see another person's point of view, perspective, and is the biggest indicator of a child with a healthy social and emotional development. Now, there's a case study here, an example where it puts, it says, shortly after starting first year in her local secondary school, Alice's 13-year-old daughter began to complain about getting stabbing pains in her stomach. The young girl, who had only received her first phone towards the end of class six, seemed to need to check her phone constantly. She couldn't put it down, recalls Alice. I hadn't seen that with her older sister. Suspecting the anxiety had something to do with the phone, Alice brought her daughter to a play therapist. Several sessions later, the therapist was able to tell Alice that every morning, as soon as her daughter boarded the school bus and opened her phone, she was inundated with messages and graphic sexual images. Alice discovered that many of the other first-year students, her daughter was on a number of social media apps, including the controversial anonymous messaging Saraha app, which was removed from Apple and Google stores earlier this year. Look, in this case, 2018, when the article was written, amid claims that it had been facilitating bullying. The company's CEO or chief executive denied the claims and said the app wasn't meant for use by younger teenagers. I mean, can you imagine that? Then the girls were uploading images of themselves and people were anonymously commenting on them, recalls Alice. She was getting on the bus to school and being inundated with all sorts of messages, as well as getting multiple dick pictures. She didn't know how to deal with it, let alone tell her parents. When I heard this, I was blown away. I'm still trying to cope with the fact that she literally didn't know how to get out of the social media app, not technically, but in terms of peer pressure, and that she never spoke about this to me. Some kids are more vulnerable than others, and tech exploits that. It plays to the biggest social factors of young adolescents, wanting to be part of the gang and not wanting to miss out on things. Much of what twins and teenagers receive on social media is hidden from parents, believes Alice, whose daughter has since deleted several social media apps from her phone. The communication and images are so fast and are gone so quickly. I couldn't monitor it all. The pictures and messages they get can be destructive. The nature of the communications in technology has made it very difficult for children to tell their parents about it. I was not being told because she didn't know how to handle it. I only got to know because of the tummy pains, says Alice. Her daughter, she says, could receive something so destroying in the split second that I turned around to switch on the kettle. The damage is done, and I don't even see it happening. I was completely missing the damage being done to her, and that is where technology really becomes dangerous. We were out for the meal recently. A family of six was sitting at another table, two parents and four children aged from around 4 to 15. Every member of the family was on the screen. There was no talking. They ordered the food and went back to their screens. When the food came, they put the screens down beside their plates and ate whilst watching the screens. This is becoming the norm. The social implications are massive. Technology is really making things hard for you as a parent. You can never be sure what roles it's playing in your family. And even if you do everything you can, you still can't be sure you are keeping them safe. And indeed, this is a very serious case study or report. And let me now get into this part. This one, let me just list. I don't know whether I can finish today, but I'm talking of just technology and the Christian family. I have 3 points. The first is addiction. You know, we first have to understand how these devices have been designed. You know, addiction, as I said, I was talking about the games and all that. It starts little, and then you increase, and then you increase, and then by the time you realize, you are becoming addicted. And you notice that, I'm sure most of the listeners, and you know, phone is now your biggest challenge, because you just can't put your phone down. You every few minutes you have to check. Every few minutes you want to check. You head pooping, you have to check. You take every noise, you have to check. What has come? What is done? What is, you know? So you have to steady yourself, and then to notice whether you are getting addicted to something or not. You see, most times we realize we are addicted, but the steps to mitigate or to control, we are not bold enough to take it. You know, for instance, I mean, I cite myself as an example. I was very active on Facebook because of the work I do and all that. But at a point, I realized, well, I'll go slow on it and all. But after I watched the movie, The Social Dilemma, I mean, that was it. I mean, seriously, after I watched that movie, I just decided that it was a Sunday afternoon that I watched. After watching it, I said, no. I told my wife, I'm leaving. Enough is enough. I just deactivated my account. You see, and it's been 3 months now. This afternoon, I had a message from first year, the room I was, my roommate, he was a senior pharmacist, and he sent me a message that he's not seeing me. Am I okay? It's been a while. He's not been seeing me online. I said, oh yeah, I'm fine. I just left the social media platform. I just left Facebook, you know. And see, you just have to identify your weakness and then deal with it. Fine. I mean, there were times I could just say that, oh, I won't go there today, and then, okay, I won't go. But I realized, after watching The Social Dilemma, the movie, it's a movie documentary, documentary drama, sort of. It became more real to me that then, what's the big deal? What do I lose? Nothing. Let me just back out of this place, you see. And this is where the challenge is for a lot of people. A lot of people know that this thing is not really helping them, but they struggle to go out of the trap. It's like it's a matrix, like a web. You are caught in it, and you just don't know how to maneuver yourself out of it. You know, one thing I decided to do. When I joined Facebook, for instance, was not to use the Facebook app. So I didn't, my phone, I don't use, when I was active on Facebook, I didn't use the Facebook app because, you see, when you are using these apps on your phone directly, it's the notifications, unless you disable it, but, you see, notifications keep coming and you want to go and check, okay, so who said this and who said that, and, okay, someone has commented, you want to... Okay, what did the person comment on? Or what did the person say? So you see, the back and forth. But it's becoming more alarming and worrying because statistics is also showing that teenage and the youth suicide rates have gone higher since the onset of social media networks. You see, and there's... A number of cases of girls who, you know, Instagram or whichever social media platform they are on, they put their picture there and they are not getting the likes and all that. So, okay, is it that I'm not beautiful? Is it that my dress is not beautiful? Hey, this other girl in church, she posted the picture and see how all the guys, men are commenting, you look good, the dress is nice. So comparison starts. So now psychologically, you feel you are inferior. Maybe you are not beautiful, or your dress is not beautiful. Okay, or your face. Okay, or your shape. I mean, so now it begins to affect you, and it's becoming a problem for you. These are realities that are happening. Even in the church, Christian ladies are suffering from these things I'm talking about. So there are some who always want to impress people, you know, by posting pictures that look, you know, so always try to count how many people are liking the pictures, how many are commenting on it. If people don't comment, then means there's a problem somewhere. You see, and these are the dangers that lurk behind. So it's like, as if, oh, it's a good system. Yes, it is. But then the dangers that follow in the dark behind it, where it begins to control your life. It begins to control your life. So your thinking is affected. If these ladies or these girls are students, you can imagine. So whilst you are learning, you are thinking, are people liking my pictures? Are people commenting on my pictures? What are they saying? So any opportunity you get, you have to log in and go and check what have people commented on. Then you go, and after 5 hours of posting a beautiful wedding picture or party picture you took, and after 5 hours, you just have two people liking it and no comments. It's like, what's wrong? Is it that people are not seeing it? You see, so eventually it begins to drain you psychologically. It begins to drain you spiritually, because you see, the devil knows how to play the game. Oh yes, let me just, you know, the example of, in talking of the addiction, there is this example of a South Korean couple. They starved their child to death while they were caring for a virtual child. And this is an extreme part, but this is a reality. It happened in South Korea years back, where, you know, in virtual system where, like, you are catering for a child or whatever system, and they were engaged in that one to the point where they forgot to feed their own child, physical, their own human being child in their house. Forgot about their child while they were busy online. You know, I mean, these are extremes, but these are the realities in life. It's happening. People forget that they have to even do something because they are so caught up online that they forget that they have to go here, they have to do this, they have to go here and all that. These are the realities. And that's why we have to be extremely careful, because you see, but the need to be plugged in, I mean, to know what's happening, to read updates, to share updates, is a modern and, you know, an unhelpful phenomenon that has the center for most internet addiction. If only we felt the same eagerness to read God's word and pursue our relationship with him that way. And you see, let me read 1 Corinthians 6:12. It says, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. As of now, there are a lot of adults. We are not even talking about the children. Even now, adults are under the power of social media. They are under the power of internet. So it's like they can't break free. They can't break free. It's like it's a struggle. The addiction is real. Oh yeah. And there are some who just don't know how to go about it. Some know how to go about it, but they always find reasons and they keep procrastinating, and the reasons why they can't do it and why they shouldn't do it. You know, it's that bad that there are people who lack sleep. They really sleep very little and spend hours in the night on social media. And it's been designed in a way that a page doesn't end. You scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll, and to be loading, so it's like a never ending expedition. So you go and go and go, then the system will restart itself, the page will reload, then you see the latest post again, then you see, so they are just being used. They are on and on and on and on and on. But the irony of this whole thing is, the people who create these things for us, they themselves are not using them. Their usage is minimal at best, to the point where, for instance, Zuckerberg, who Facebook is the boss, his own, I mean, Facebook is his and all that, he pays people to manage his page for him. So he himself doesn't even waste time on Facebook. So he's done it. Let's make money from you people. Because the longer you stay there, the more they make their money from the adverts. That's where the revenue comes in. So they are billionaires. And it's like, you see, after I watched these reports and all, that's what I said, no. I won't be wasting my time to make some people rich. Let me also go and use that time to do something for myself. Because, you see, they are just making money out of, they see us as products. they see us, the users, as products. They are just making money off our backs. I mean, so the system is designed in a way to just keep you glued to it. So the longer you stay, then average revenue rises, then they make their money. So whilst you are wasting your data and then you are spending your time, then they are smiling, going to the bank. And that's exactly what they've done with these systems. So now it's been done in a way to create addiction. Psychologically, they've done a lot of research. So they deny it, but some of the former workers attest to these facts that the systems have been well designed psychologically to cause you to spend much longer time there. So this is where, as Christians, we should know how to pull the brakes or how to control ourselves there. Let me, 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who would not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." So there's a room to every temptation. So it doesn't matter, yes, your addiction, you are struggling with it and all, but you should be able to pull the brakes. You should be able to say that enough is enough, or I won't go beyond 10 minutes. I'm sure listeners will say that, I've experienced this before. I'm just going to Facebook for just 10 minutes. And by the time you realize, you spent 1 hour there. Because you see, you keep seeing, let me read. So 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, by the time you realize, 60 minutes. And then, I didn't know I'll spend this much time. But then that time is gone. You've used it. You see, there's a lot we have to understand about these systems. And the reason why I'm discussing these things now is that the hour is very late. Spiritually, we are in a very late hour now, that the devil is distracting us with anything available and anything possible. And it's in our own interest to really be careful about the times we are in, the times we live in, because if we just take things for granted and just assume that, it doesn't matter and all that, at the end of the day, we realize that we've just wasted our lives on things that we cannot hold as tangible. You've just wasted our time on things that didn't carry any spiritual gain. We've wasted our time on things with no eternal value. And that is the reason why we need to be circumspect with how we spend our time. And because, see, when they get you addicted to their systems, of course, you are going to spend time on it. You are going to spend time there. And I believe the more we pay attention to these things, because these areas I'm talking about, even adults are struggling there. So how much more the children? See, and adults should be able to help themselves first before they can help the children. So if the parents are struggling in these areas, how effective can they help the children? Because the parents are supposed to be the role models at home. So if even the parents cannot be good role models, then there's trouble for the children then. And this is where we have to see the seriousness of these things and act accordingly. And it's important we take note of these things. Let me use this last 15 minutes to get some listeners to get involved. Some may have issues to share or experiences to share. And then we continue, God willing, next week. So 0546-898-888. You can call, you can send your message to 0244-638-757. 0244-638-757. And then let's see. Okay, I think I have a message here. Okay, so it's concerning the America's 6 months anti-abortion act and the China's 3 hours children gaming time. It appears to me that Satan is doing everything possible to make sin both convenient and acceptable. Wilfred David Santasi. You know, the devil is working hard. He's really, 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 really working hard. And okay, we have a caller on the line. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Okay, you on air, please.
My name is Frank.
Okay, yeah.
I just want to appreciate what you are doing.
We thank God.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you too.
I'm really touched.
We thank God for it.
What you guys making a comment about the gaming. Mm-hmm. I was watching a TV, and the series item was being shown on a French channel that this evening,
mm-hmm.
when you were commenting about it. France 24, I was watching France 24.
Oh, okay.
And the same item, they were making news commenting about gaming, how children were, Chinese children were making gaming as their first choice instead of studying and then going to school.
Wow.
And the same thing, I was watching and hearing you as well. As well.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you too. 0546-898-888. You can send your message to 0244-638-757. 0244-638-757. Okay, we have another caller. Hello, good evening. Hello, good evening.
Good evening, Ezizain.
Boko, Nimiadum.
Ezizain, I'm going to
oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You okay, dear? We, my young combo panel crumble so.
Mm-hmm.
You can use phone and data.
Mm-hmm.
The most three scenarios be
okay.
Niangasa Chrome, LG, Nama Mini, the phone. As I say, why is so much concentrated? Our phone, so much, me bow, ni ni nam crampo. You know, me chia bofar na me di share ni semi semi mami.
Mhm.
Jehovah.
Wow.
Kanchi ya kabe bono. Next one, hey, even I'm sorry. I saw them move.
The
only prayer meeting. Only the mission. It is that done from my bonfire.
Oh, I saw more.
No mission, no browser.
Wow.
And another one, a friend saying, hey, Corita. Yes, all to you now, yeah, worship you. Now, you fool no epitome, no to you know. Now, or no browser on the phone, so or the Facebook will send you to get a phone. You mean, what's your name for phone? As you say, in the phone and Cassano, as you say, we were serious, no, serious in court. Okay, you can say, serious problem. If you are living, who was reading, now only do worship, and answer, we need the prayer meeting, now keep that way, as you say, own. You see, that is Michel Nissan, who is Michel Boussard, I didn't know. My nephew was sorry. That's it.
Now, Michel, you know, Asamo, this addiction thing is a real issue. It's a real issue. 0546-898-888. We have another caller. Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Please lower your radio set.
Okay.
Hello.
No,
okay, yeah. Pacho, won't lower on you.
Sir, and my memory.
Okay.
Yes, I'm a dumb thing.
Okay, better. Yeah.
I was a baby, you know, I was a fiancé, especially Christians. Was a we must know the devices of the devil.
Yeah.
But some know, or no, or you're creative, or you're innovative, or you're talented, or you're gifted. And see, yeah, no, hey, Dilly, I was very careful. They've been from the very beginning, like the Garden of Eden. And who here? What transpired between Eve and Adam? Eve and the devil.
Yeah.
Attention. I said, what you're not going to see the abandonment. And what status on the neck? Although something no one can say, I will not have wide range division. And you're not careful, start internet, start social media, and abana. And you're not weapon power, the year tomorrow. Because I'm not going to tell you, Suba. What I said, I was so yarding every year or so. Oh, but the Bible took a way I wanted to Christians, so I was looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith.
Yeah,
that's some way, no, and your prophetic word. I did my yay, and we am him for say, I'm for your dear and see you so. Not done it, then you know, young children of all. No, you can't see 2 years here. You put the Rebecca hell. What I say? And the crystal port is said that my prayer, I know what I say. Or bitch, I saw them now browsing.
Yeah.
Go bitch, I saw the only boy chat. He said, a friend is a robot move. He moved change. Sorry, please. Now, Banity, yes, you're careful. A crystal for me and in the
home.
What I say? Bible, no need to know any issue. And then we have to know my banner, and then when, where's that? My camera to say, you missed the time. When you know, also not too late.
It's true.
Okay, that's the fact.
That's an Amish Raupa. 0546-898-888. You can send your message to 0244-638-757. 0244-638-757. But for the calls, you can call 0546-898-888. Okay, we have another caller. Hello, good evening. Hello, good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes.
My name is Isaac.
I can't hear you. There's a lot of noise. Hello.
Please, my name is Isaac.
Okay, better now.
And I want to admonish comment about the message you were admonishing.
Okay.
First, I want to thank you that it is very educative, and also it is an eye opening that listening to these words, most of us here, especially those who want to live a life to please God. It will give us direction in life. Also, I want to comment about the internet thing.
Yeah,
you were saying that even those who manufactured it, they are not using it, and so because they have plans to think ahead. So if we want to also become successful businessmen and others, we should also make our time very important to us to think about our businesses and our serving God and forget about this internet and other thing. Thank you
for your call. We have this message from Stanley. It says, I'm a Sunday school teacher, but then I want to help my kids on how to break these addictions, but they look so innocent because during Sunday school lesson they will be playing their games. Parents hand over their phones to their children so they can have their way or become less busy. It's worrying, but if you dare take the phone from them, then they kind of look kind of look you get from the mom or the dad, any suggested help? You know, I believe, let me, okay, we have this caller, let me pick and then I'll talk. Hello? Is it no? Okay. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Good evening.
Good evening, Brad Evan.
Okay.
Please, this is Lisa calling from Transalcy.
All right. You're on air, please?
Yeah, please. I want to comment about this transgender thing.
Yeah.
Yesterday, my brother showed me a picture of this celebrity guy who is a gay. Actually, he's the one who manufactured this blood shoes. Yeah. Now he's pregnant. Like, for real, he's really pregnant. Thank you, Radele. God bless you.
Hey, as of this generation, the wonders that they are doing with medical science, these doctors forget that there's God who is going to judge them for the things they do. Okay, I think... okay, one last caller. Then, okay. Hello, good evening.
Hello.
Please lower your radio for me, please.
Yeah, hello. Yeah.
Yeah, good evening.
Yes, my name... Medidi Stephen Champon.
Okay.
Because I'm from Kuti.
Kuti,
okay. Medidi said, Bible, she said, I'm not going to be here, I'm going to be here. The Becana sem if you baby a co baby na the baby when they say technology na abano your opportunity ama Christopher see you bit my leverage on it near to me a Kenya me a semino a co baby and immediately me and say a bribiano pebiano me platform my most in anno the sorry temper and I'm the Yamia semi decay both will be an a co be a team.
It's good to use it for
yeah
but a honna into me and draw line here a honna problem to say if you be Kenya, me send me an effort. Time no.
Oh, to promote the kingdom business,
yeah.
And you're better. Now, mommy and now say, yeah, you won't immediate. Now, say, woman, who won't immediate more, and then nobody take you over. It's me, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, me to us, because actually, the whole discussion is moderation to control,
yeah.
But say, oh, share now, say, won't be share, honsu ye, padia, and any. Bible say, ube trial and son, ube trial nine, say, ube two in it, and say, ube caught hell, dear. Into,
yeah.
Depending on, so be our assessment, huh? Share will level, say, ube to me, and ube to me, so, and then maybe ube to me, no strength, one, na we use it, that yet, in the midjuman. But that's a far.
Yeah, me come.
Yo, amen. So let me quickly, please, I can't pick a call again so that I can address the question from Stanley. No, I believe it's time churches start organizing meetings or discussions for parents, some of these things, these topics on digital parenting and all that, so that parents can be brought to know, to they can know what the dangers are and how to control the children and themselves and all that. Because you see, when there's lack of understanding about what is happening and you want to control or you want to bring a change, there's something we call resistance to change. Because the parent has been used to a child not worrying them whenever they give the phone to the child. Now you are come to tell them that they should stop giving the phone to the child. And then the child should start crying and disturbing them again. You see, some of these things, the approach will be difficult if you just go without educating them to know the real dangers at stake. Then they can understand and appreciate the help that you are bringing on board. So I believe the approach should be parents being educated along these lines before steps can be taken to help them know how to help their children. Because if the parents themselves are not helped, they cannot help the children. And then that's the challenge we have there. Issues of Life is the program, and God willing, next week you'll be coming your way to continue with these things. These are very serious and critical issues, I believe, and we have to take note of it because it affects our spirituality and it affects our relationship with God. Of course, there's the good side of it, but we are looking at the negatives which seems to overrun and overshadow, the good parts for most people. And the other exposures, the pornography, that's a whole topic on its own, and the time and all these things. God willing, next week we'll be looking more into some of these things. Eben, God willing, next week, let me pick this last caller and then I think he's trying to call. Hello, good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I'm calling from Ahina Hope of Being.
Oh, okay. You're on the episode. Last caller.
I would like to highlight more on what my brother just called, commented on.
Yeah.
That we should focus more on telling it we are good, we Christians. Like, we telling people to forget about it. I don't see how we can forget about using the internet and
No. We are not saying we should forget about it. Too.
Not me.
Okay.
That is where they are driving their attention as well. Mm-hmm. We should forget about it. But as our brother, our last caller said, we have to use it for our good. Like, keeping up preaching and all that on our various groups. We think to also get people's attention to come on the word of God or Jesus Christ. Than me not doing anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And also about the Sunday school teacher who sends a message. As you said, you can't just go forward and collect the phone from the children. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You have to first educate the parents who are giving the phone to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the doing this is going to bring about. So it's all about teaching.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And God bless you.
God bless you too. Thank you for calling. All right. So that was our last caller for the night. Eben, good night, and God bless you. The recording will be put on spiritissues.info, and for those in the Telegram group, it will be in the Spirit Issues group there. I'll upload it there as well. Okay, God bless you.